On January 18th, 2015, on the Stanford University campus, Turner, then a 19-year-old student athlete, sexually assaulted a 22-year-old woman, Chanel Miller, while she was unconscious. Two graduate students intervened and held Turner in place until police arrived. This is the story of The People versus Turner, Part 2 on the Dark Side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is The Dark Side of Wikipedia.
This is part two of The People versus Turner. We're picking it up on the reaction and the controversy over his sentence. Prosecutors and victims' rights advocates criticize Persky's sentencing as lenient and biased. Persky himself had been a student and lacrosse team captain at Stanford University. Nancy Brewer, retired Santa Clara County Assistant Public Defender, described Persky as being respected by both prosecutors and defenders, stating that he was seen as a fair judge who was not soft on crime or a judge that would give lenient sentences. Brewer said that Persky had carefully evaluated the evidence and did what he thought was a fair and appropriate sentence in the case, based on the Santa Clara County Probation Department's pre-sentence investigation report. Attorney and media legal analyst Danny Selivo said, "The judge absolutely is obliged to consider very seriously the probation department report," and noted that the California Penal Code allows a judge to depart from the statutory minimum 2 years after considering the defendant's lack of criminal history and the effect of incarceration. Selivos believed that while the sentence was lenient, Turner's prior clean record made him a candidate for minimum sentencing. Deputy Public Defender Sajid Khan did not consider the sentence lenient. As he noted, Turner will register as a sex offender for life. And if he violates his probation, he could go to prison for 14 years. Khan further stated that Persky's reputation among public defenders, a group closely attuned to racial inequities in the courtroom, is that of a fair-minded jurist, saying, "No one has been able to cite an example so far of him where a similarly situated minority client has been treated harshly by him. We appreciated the judge's understanding of Brock Turner's humanity, and we would want any judge to do the same for our clients." Similarly, other sitting judges, both state and federal, and legal commentators have defended Persky's decision, noted that the sentence may, in their opinion, be disproportionate due to the lifelong consequences of a criminal conviction and sex offender registration, and called on the bar to protect the independence of the judiciary. Turner's father protested the prison sentence requested by the prosecutor, saying, "The sentence is a steep price to pay for 20 minutes of action out of his 20-plus years of life." Santa Clara County District Attorney Jeffrey F. Rosen criticized the letter from Turner's father to the court, saying, "It reduced a brutal sexual assault to 20 minutes of action?" Persky recalled, although he did not face any opposition in the election held 5 days after the sentencing, Persky faced a campaign to recall him. Online petitions calling for Persky to be removed attracted over a million signatures. By June 10, 2016, Professor Michelle Dober of the Stanford Law School and longtime advocate on campus sexual assault, who is also a family friend of the victim, led the committee to recall Judge Persky. The committee planned to collect signatures in Santa Clara County to force a November 2017 recall vote. A request for an injunction by Persky delayed that initiative. The California Attorney General's office supported the property of the county register of voters' approval of the petition, allowing the recall to go forward. Persky's legal team argued that since he was a state officer, only the California Secretary of State had the authority to approve its acceptance. The recall vote required gathering 90,000 verified signatures. Persky paid $30,000 to the firm of Brian Stechlick to lead the opposition to the recall. A retired judge living in Santa Cruz heard Persky's request for injunction to prevent the recall election and approved it. The demands for recall received support from Representative Ted Poe, who spoke of the United States House of Representatives to condemn Turner's sentence as too lenient and to call for Persky's removal. The move to recall Persky was opposed by the Santa Clara County Public Defender, who said she was alarmed by the hysteria about the Turner sentence. A group of 70 public defenders petitioned in support of Persky, warning against mass incarceration brought upon by state legislatures or indiscreet judges, and fearing that the backlash against Persky could hurt their clients, mostly poor African and Latinos, by compelling judges to give out harsh sentences. Deputy Public Defender Sajid Khan wrote, "Rather than using robotic one-size-fits-all punishment schemes, we want judges like Judge Persky to engage in thoughtful, case-by-case, individualized determinations of the appropriate sentence for a particular crime and particular offender." Santa Clara County District Attorney Jeff Rosen, whose office prosecuted Turner and did not appeal the sentence, stated, "While I strongly disagree with the sentence that Judge Persky issued in the Brock Turner case, I do not believe he should be removed from his judgeship." Adding, "Judicial independence is a critical part of the U.S. justice system. The immense power that comes with judicial independence also comes with accountability to the people that we serve." It's the dark side of Wikipedia, People versus Turner, on today's episode, and we're in part two of it. Lots to cover here. If you like our program, be sure to help support us. Become a Dark Sider over at Patreon, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Get access to all of our episodes in advance, like months before they're released to the public. No ads on those at all. And you also get our final chapter segments as well, and that's what helps keep our program on the air. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you are listening as well. Thoughts thus far on this whole thing of recalling the judge for...
I think he should have been recalled.
Yeah?
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I think... there's so many things to be pissed off about in this trial, and that's just one of them.
Yeah.
But I think they re-victimized the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, he is a top swimmer. The guy made a mistake.
Yeah.
Where they victimized her, and I've got some of her impact statement pulled up in front of me, because it's over 7,000 words long. It's not like we can read it. But I would advise anyone, you can Google Emily Doe victim impact statement and read it. It's powerful stuff. And I think it really puts it into perspective, where they're like, well, they looked at his criminal record. Well, you know what? Most people aren't convicted of every time they rape someone or attempt to rape someone.
Sure.
That is a very underreported crime. There's, you know, especially... And in her case, she was so, like, she didn't drink all that much, and she admits to drinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
But even that doesn't, because people drink too much all the time.
It's not a ticket to rape. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But she was so blacked out that I still wonder if somebody didn't give her something.
Yeah.
Because she was really, she doesn't remember anything. And, you know, so it was like they kind of slut shamed her.
Yeah.
And he's like this top swimmer. It's like, well, you know what? He messed up. No, he really messed up. He was sticking things inside a woman.
Yeah.
You know, and like it was really nasty. Like when they did the exam, she had dirt up inside her.
Yeah.
That's nasty.
That is.
You know, that's very aggressive. That's not gentle when you're getting dirt
inside you,
up inside someone.
Yeah, that's
You know, so the whole thing makes me mad, and just kind of but you know, his real punishment is he's going to be a sex offender the rest of his life. You know what? He is a sex offender now that he's officially labeled one. And your point is, he is a sex offender. He is. He raped a woman, and that's a punishment because he did it. I can't feel sorry for someone who rapes someone and then it's like, well, but the poor guy's going to be a sex offender.
No, I don't fucking care what sport you're in. I don't care what school you're going to. I don't care what power bar you ate for breakfast. It doesn't fucking matter. If you did that and you found that to be an okay act at some point in your life for 20 minutes, well, guess what? That 20 minutes really showed a lot about your character and what a horrible human being you truly are deep down inside. I don't care what wonderful, great, nice things you did in the past. If that's what you're doing in 20 minutes and you found that to be okay, No.
And the time he got caught.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not convinced, and there's been some reports of other women that had encounters with him, but I'm not convinced he didn't do something like this before. You don't get caught the first time.
I mean, people usually who have this sort of mindset, that's their mindset. That's how they operate. I mean, exactly.
I've heard of other stories where someone was labeled a sex offender, which I really did find questionable. I'm like, you know, like he was 18, she was 17.
Sure.
You know, the age is so close. Like, there are times that I think that.
There are false accusations. There's a lot of things I think the.
But this isn't one of those.
No, you had witnesses.
Chased him and caught him.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, that sucks. But guess what? You did it. You brought this on yourself. There's plenty of times where the system fails or where an accusation can be brought and it's false. And, you know, we don't have a perfect system whatsoever. But this is pretty black and white as far as what happened here.
But what's sad is it's not to her.
Yeah.
He's the one who gets to write the book on this because she doesn't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it almost, you know, you can black out from drinking, obviously. But, you know, she was so completely blacked out. This is in her impact statement. She said, "One day I was at work scrolling through the news on my phone and came across an article. In it, I read I had learned for the first time about how I was found unconscious, my hair disheveled, long necklace wrapped around my neck, bra pulled out of my dress pulled off over my shoulder and pulled up." She read all of this and was butt naked all the way down to my boots, legs spread apart, and I'd been penetrated by a foreign object by someone I did not recognize. That's how I learned what happened.
Through her phone.
So she went in and had the rape kit done. They took pictures of her, which... the rape kit is pretty violating in itself, and having pictures taken of your genitals is pretty violating, and all the people you don't know looking up inside you and poking around. But then nobody told her what had happened, and you know, they hadn't charged him yet. They don't have the information, but that's how she found out. Now, what about the victim in this? Like, how was she not brought in and talked to? And given this information was with someone, you know, supports system around her, you know, parents, sibling, whoever she'd want to take. But, and she's like, and she was covered with pine needles. And then, so she said, then she read, you know, about it happening outside. That's when the pine needles in my hair made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So here she's got pine needles in her hair, and she's like, "Why do I have pine needles in my hair?"
Mm-hmm.
She said, "He had taken off my underwear. His fingers had been inside me. I don't even know this person. I still don't know this person. When I read about me like this, I said, this can't be me. This can't be me.
Mm-hmm.
I could not digest or accept any of this information. I could not imagine my family having to read about this online."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I read something," she said, "I read something I'll never forgive. I read that according to him, I liked it." I liked it. That's what he said. She doesn't even know. Like, so then these are the people. And that's why I'm pissed off at that judge. It's like, you know, you don't get to treat another human being like that.
No. I've been really super keen on the idea of like lifelong judgeships. I know that's how the system works, but I've always thought that was kind of fucked up. Like, why? I mean, why do we have judges that are in there for life or until they want to quit? I mean, what is that? That doesn't seem to be. I mean, people's opinions change throughout their life. People's, you know, the person you are at one age is likely not the same person you're going to be 20, 30 years from now.
Right. And then like dementia, Alzheimer's, those sorts of things, like, you know, that's being a difficult subject to deal with when, you know, your father, your spouse, your grandfather has issues, or grandmother, and you know, let alone trying to convince them they're not qualified or able to properly do their job.
Yeah. And just being in touch with society. I mean, there's a certain age where it's like, you just get out of touch. That is what it is. And I know you're basing it on law, and you're basing it on what the rules and everything are, and what the laws are. But at the same point, you have to have an acceptance and an understanding of the pulse of the way things are working and the way society is functioning. You know, so if you got in there in a different place in time, if you became a judge in the 60s, society is right. Very different today, you know, in terms of how it looks on many things racially, equality wise, sexual orientation, things like that. And unless you're, you know, someone who has rolled with the punches of society and how things have changed. A lot of them haven't. And then that's how you get some of these judges where it's like, oh God, you got that judge. He's like, he makes rulings like it was 1972. And I don't like this. I think it should be renewed. Maybe it's not like an every 4-year thing, but maybe like an every 10, 15-year thing where go ahead, run again. And if they vote you in again, you can stay. But I think it should be an election process for judges.
Most judgeships are, like in my town, judges have to be reelected.
They do?
But okay. I think when you get to that level of like a Supreme Court level. Yeah. I think state Supreme Courts.
Okay.
I don't know if those are voted in, but the judges here locally are voted
in.
But I totally know what you're saying, because it's like, you know, for a long time it was a boys will be boys mentality.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it right.
No.
But that's the way they were brought up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, and for him to not have any more empathy for the victim.
Yeah.
By saying, well, he's going to be a sex offender for the rest of his life. That's basically assigning him the victim role.
Exactly.
He doesn't get to be the victim.
I know.
Yeah. And it happens all the time. And that just bothers me.
Let's continue on here. We still have more to cover about the judge and more on the case as we continue in. Danny Salvo stated that judges enjoy a modicum of independence from public pressure, and there are no apparent grounds for impeachment or allegations of judicial misconduct based on this sentence alone. Salvo said that the recall movement raises the question, is removing judges good for the spirit of the judiciary system, especially when the judge's sole transgression is a legal sentence where he correctly applied the law? The Santa Clara County Bar Association released a statement saying that removing Persky would be a threat to judicial independence and weighs just one of his 13 years of decisions too heavily, saying they see no credible assertions that in issuing the sentence, Judge Persky violated the law or his ethical obligations or acted in bad faith. Similarly, other sitting judges, both state and federal, and legal commentators defended Persky's decision, noted that the sentence might, in their opinion, be disproportionate to the lifelong consequences of a criminal conviction and sex offender registration, and called on the bar to protect the independence of the judiciary. In June of 2016, at least 10 prospective jurors refused to serve in a misdemeanor trial for possession of stolen property where Persky was presiding, citing the judge's sentencing of Turner as a reason. The following week, Rosen filed a premature motion for the recusal in a case where Persky was to preside over the criminal trial of a surgical nurse charged with sexual battery for allegedly touching the genitals of a patient under sedation. Rosen called his move to have the judge removed from the case a rare and carefully considered step for our office. As a result of the backlash in the wake of his sentencing, Persky asked not to hear any more criminal cases and was resigned to the civil division of the California court system. The Santa Clara County Register of Voters on January 24, 2018, confirmed that sufficient signatures had been verified to put the recall on the ballot. There were 94,539 signatures submitted, only a fraction of which were verified in order to reach the total needed to qualify. The recall issue was on the state elections ballot on June 5, 2018. The California Commission on Judicial Performance found that Persky had not abused his discretion. He was supported by dozens of law school professors, retired judges, and the Santa Clara Bar Association. He stood by his sentencing, saying he's been unfairly targeted as the face of rape by recall advocates. At the same time, he admitted there is an underlying deep frustration among actual victims of sexual assault and women in general about the criminal justice system not taking sexual assault and domestic violence seriously. It's a very genuine and important problem. The passion is authentic. The end is justified. Let's increase sexual assault reporting. Let's do criminal justice reform where it's smart to do so. In a press conference in May 2018, Persky compared his sentence handed down in the Turner case to that of Brown versus Board of Education. On May 18th, 2018 interview, Persky stated he had no regrets and would rule exactly the same on the case. Two women, Cindy Hendrickson and Santa Clara County Assistant District Attorney Angela Story, a civil attorney, appeared on the ballot to take Persky's position in the event of a successful recall. Story opposed the recall on principle. When the election results are being tabulated and they indicated Persky would be recalled, Professor Dauber stated, "The vote today is a vote against impunity for high-status offenders of domestic violence and sexual violence." Hendrickson won the election to take Persky's place. Persky left the bench and Hendrickson was sworn in 10 days after the election results were certified. In the June 5, 2018 primary election, nearly 200,000 Santa Clara County voters turned out, voting to remove Persky by 61.51% to 38.49%, a margin of over 23%. Persky was the first judge to be recalled by voters in California in 86 years, and the first in the United States since 1977. The county clerk had 28 days to certify the recall election results, 10 days after which Hendrickson would take Persky's place on the bench. Persky was ordered to pay $161,000 in restitution for lawsuits he filed against the recall. He sought over $135,000 in donations from the public to cover attorney fees after $840,000 previously raised had been exhausted. And then a revisit of previous civil cases of alleged rape. In 2011, Persky presided over a civil lawsuit against multiple members of De Anza College basketball team who were accused by plaintiff Jane Doe of gang raping and then the then underage girl while she was unconscious until another party attendee who heard the commotion intervened. And we'll go into that part of the story in just a few moments. What do you think of the recall there that actually ended up happening to the judge?
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what people were so outraged by was it didn't seem like this guy had committed a horrific crime. He could have sentenced him more. But once again, like, it's everybody else's fault, not this guy's fault that mm-hmm. we're in this situation. You know, it's like, well, it's this, it's that. I don't remember in everything we've discussed between this week and last week if they did say how many years he could have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember that. But I just think it was an insult,
yeah,
you know, to this poor woman and to women everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe as women, we just see this different and men like you who get it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just a horrific crime. And I think that some men just see it as sex. I'm just having sex. I just had sex with her. So she was drunk and doesn't remember it. And, you know, it's horribly violating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I had my house robbed once. Like, yeah. I couldn't sleep for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
I kept thinking he was going to come back in, and he just went through all my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Not through my body.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. It just bothers me that he was caught in a crime. And the, like, when you think about other crimes that get 2 years, mm-hmm. was it 2 years that he got?
I believe so. I got to look up exactly. We covered that last week, but yeah.
But when you think of some of, like, people who got busted for weed
mm-hmm.
have served more time.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, there are more strict sentences for offenses like that versus raping someone.
You know,
it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Now, maybe if you're smoking weed, you got in the car and you caused a horrible accident, you know, then there's multiple crimes.
Yes.
But just getting busted with, you know, a quarter ounce of weed or whatever, I'm like, I could go buy a bottle of vodka and not remember a damn thing. And that's legal.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think, I mean, it's really interesting that we're in a place now, and I think there is, you know, there's a lot of cases where things are looked at, and if the public does not get the result that they want, you kind of get the villagers with the pitchfork thing going on.
Yeah.
And in some cases, very justified. In others, it seems to be a little out of hand. But this one, I think, feels very justified, where it wasn't just, they didn't just take it sitting down and like, okay, well, that's what the judge wanted. We're in a very activist mindset right now, where if something like this happens, this is what you got villagers with the pitchforks. And, and if the person who is supposed to be, you know, the final straw and the curator of justice, and they couldn't do their job, I think it's kind of nice that we're at a place where not everybody's just going to sit down and be like, well, it is what it is. Like, no, let's do something about it if it's wrong. I mean, if that is truly a miscarriage of justice, good. I'm glad that people were motivated enough to get out there and do something and say something.
And look in California, they just, or they're in the middle of this whole recall thing with their governor.
Yeah.
Whether you agree with them or you don't agree with them.
Mm-hmm.
They have the right to that process.
Yeah.
I don't live in California, so what they do doesn't really affect me.
Yeah.
But, you know, that you've got that right to start a recall petition. And if you get enough signatures and you can see it through and you get recalled and then you don't get elected, you know, someone's taking your place. That shit just happens.
Yeah. It happens.
I just don't feel that bad about it. A lot of people disagreed. They have the right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people listening right now might totally, like, they might be sitting there yelling at us going, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a sex offender for his whole life.
And
well,
he should
you know
be.
What? You get to have that opinion.
Yeah.
I get to have mine. And sometimes we don't always agree. I do say we can agree on something. Maybe we both like dogs. But, you know, I was like, let's go to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah.
Then. But I just, in this particular case, it just comes across as a victimless crime. And it's anything but a victimless crime.
Yeah.
This woman has to live with that forever. And just, it's like, and maybe it's because I had a similar thing happen to me, but I was in my house and I came to and this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually got him out of my house. It was dark. He had no idea that I had backed up into the kitchen and gotten a knife. Because I was like, I will stab him if he doesn't leave my house, because I don't know what's going on. But I was totally blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me something. And I blamed myself for that.
Sure.
For years. And it, you know, so maybe that's why a lot of women see this different, because a lot of women see themselves in it.
Yeah. Well, I think anytime you can put yourself in the victim's shoes, you're going to have a more, you know, intimate connection to it and a more authentic connection to what they're going through. And
I would go so far as to say 8 to 9 out of 10 women have had some sort of sexual crime against them.
Sure.
It might not have been full on rape. They might have been any number of things.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different things that can happen, but it's prevalent.
It is.
And it's been okay for a long time. You know, they had a case around here where, and these three kids are 16, 15, 16 years old. And what they did was horrible. They raped a girl. They videoed it. They showed it to everybody. And they thought it was funny. Well, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And they all got arrested. And I don't know. They haven't been sentenced yet. It's not going to be good for them at all.
It makes you wonder, like, what on earth can be done to curb some of this? You know, I mean, I mean, we live in such
what give someone permission. Yeah. Like, how do you say, you know what, me and my two buddies are going to get together and, you know, and it might have just happened. Maybe they hadn't planned it. I'm not saying they did, but they did it.
I mean, it's just, it's such turns. It's such a fucked up mindset. I guess that's just, it's trying to wrap your mind around. It's not a spur of the moment decision, like for, I think, most sane men. I mean, you got to have something wrong in you if you're like, well, she's kind of out of it. Well, maybe I'll still rape her. Like, what? I don't know. I mean, there's plenty of guys out there for some reason that bumper doesn't exist. That filter is not in existence for them. And I don't understand how or why. And I don't know if that's something that can be taught. I mean, to me, it's just like an instinctual thing where it's like there's certain bounds, boundaries you don't cross. And when you're talking about things like that, that's not necessarily a taught behavior. That's just, it's in you. And if it's not in you, I don't know how to, teach someone that other than, saying you don't do that. I don't know. I don't know if it's poor parenting, if it's a lack of parenting, if it's our over-sexualized culture that just throws things into expectations of men into these insane places today with the amount of porn that one can consume and the rapiness of it. I don't know. But, I mean, these things went on well before we were in our world of porn and everything else that exists. So I can't just say it's that. I don't know. It's like there's just something missing in a lot of men that I don't know that you can teach or put into them to say, you can't do this.
Yeah. Well, she obviously wanted it. Did you see what she was wearing?
Yeah.
And I got to be real honest. Like I have, I was working one night. We were doing a concert in a bar and then our part of the night got over and kind of turned into a club and lots of other people came in and I was watching these girls dancing. Now, I'm not saying, oh, they're like asking to get raped. But what I wanted to do was go over and talk to them and be like, you guys, come on. You're totally being sexualized at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
These guys do not give two shits about you.
Yeah.
I just wanted to shake them. And so nobody deserves to get victimized or raped or anything. No. I do think that, like we talked about last week with, going to a party on campus. There's nothing wrong with going to a party on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave your friend there alone after she's been drinking.
Yeah.
Make sure she leaves with you. You know, I think we all have to take some accountability. And for some reason, in this case, the girl who was raped went to the party with her sister and she did get left there. And the sister has horrible guilt over it.
Sure.
Of course you would.
There's more to the story. We're going to go into the area of the revisit of some previous civil cases that we just touched on there with the judge. We'll do that in our final chapter segment of the show. If you want to hear it, become a Dark Sider. That's a supporter of our program. Sign up at patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia. Go to our website, darksideofwikipedia.com or darksideofwiki.com rather. And you can click become a Dark Sider there and get access to this and our advanced episodes, all commercial free and help keep us on the air. So there's more to this case. Carol and myself will see you over there, patreon.com/darksideofwikipedia, for the final chapter of the People versus Turner story.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.